I can barely get any reception on this stupid thing. So far, the only station that comes in is some British guys reading news from places I'm not sure exist.
Today, in Kazakhstan, a peaceful demonstration turned to bloodshed as members of the Tuzili tribe flooded Kenpow Square in remembrance of the third anniversary of the Holmesburg massacre. And now with sports, here's Framtel Tromwibbler.
You're listening to The Hockey Show, broadcasting at 101.5 CJUM FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
I'm not sure about any of that.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you with us, everybody. Great day today. Big day today. Bell Let's Talk Day across Canada. As I say that, I'll bring in Jenna. Jenna, how are you? How's everything going?
I am just peachy. It's going.
It is going. It is a good day, though. Bell Let's Talk Day for those that... We've talked a little bit about mental health on this show, obviously, with the lockdowns that we're under and certainly some of the lack of things that we can do at this point in our lives because of lockdown. So Bell, Let's Talk Day might be important. You guys participated in that as part of the Griffins, correct? Yeah.
Yes, we did. It is very, very important to do. And I'm super happy that we were able to do that. So
just to give everybody some background, again, Canadians are celebrating that all today. You might have seen it on social media, lots of the hashtags Bell Let's Talk and all of that. It is important because there are going to be donations made to Canadian mental health programs through Bell for every time one of those hashtags gets out there. Bell will donate 5 cents to Canadian mental health programs for every applicable text, local or long distance call, tweet, TikTok video, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Snapchat, YouTube, Twitter, whatever, using Let's Bell Talk, Bell Let's Talk, excuse me, hashtag. And they're going to, for every view of the Bell Let's Talk Day video on any one of the social media platforms as well, they'll also donate 5 cents for every use of the Bell Let's Talk Facebook frame or Snapchat filter as well. They'll donate 5 cents. So an amazing amount of money going to be going towards mental health programs, which is going to be good. In 2020, so it was last January, they set a new single day record with 154,387,425 messages across all the platforms, which generated 7.7 million dollars.
That's amazing.
Like, just looking for the exact amount here, $7,719,371.25 was the exact amount they donated to mental health causes across Canada with that setup. To date, Bell, in terms of all their work with the Bell Let's Talk Day, $113 million donated to mental health initiatives, which is fantastic. So congratulations to Bell. I'm not a Bell customer by any mean in terms of what's going on, but I have been participating and will be participating all day, mainly because this is a great way to certainly do some amazing work with mental health initiatives and raise some good money for those initiatives as well.
Yeah, that's an insane number. Like, that's crazy. I love that. Yeah, make sure you guys are tweeting, posting, I don't even know the right words here, but let's get that. Let's beat last year's number. And
that would be fantastic if we did. Yeah.
Amazing.
Beat the number, see what you can do. For those that are looking and for those that might be interested, UBC has a very in-depth mental health group out there. Might want to take a look at that as well. A lot of good work being done out at UBC on the mental health initiatives. And there's some great, great places across Canada that they fund and they help in terms of getting charities off the ground and charities sort of rolling. Men's Talk is one of them. I know that for certain. Men's Talk did a great pile of work, and that came out of the UBC side of things there. So good tie-in right there to U Sports in terms of all the good work being done by universities across this country, as well as Mikhailo Grodnichuk was her and her dad, who's a professor out at UBC. They were the ones that sort of got a lot of that stuff initiated and big, big props to Michaela. She doesn't get enough credit, I don't think, for that. But she did a lot of work in terms of getting U Sports involved and getting Canada West involved in terms of a lot of the Bell Let's Talk stuff and a lot of the mental health initiatives. So I know she's graduated now and she's moved on to bigger and better things, but Michaela Grodnichuk still deserves a lot of credit, I believe. So yeah, there's a little bit of a U Sports tie-in for what's going on.
I love that. That's, I mean, we need more people like her for sure to be, even if it's just something small, like it's going to make the biggest difference to someone. So
yeah. And maybe, like I said, she was an outstanding defender for the UBC Thunderbirds as well. So glad to have her doing that work. And certainly she deserves a little recognition, I think, from us, which I'm happy to give her. Let's get into the hockey talk, because that's why we're here. It is the hockey show. Obviously, there was a little bit of news that happened in Winnipeg this past week. I'm not sure if anybody heard of it. I'm not sure if anybody paid attention to it. But Patrick Laine, no longer a Winnipeg Jet. Patrick Laine and Jack Roslovic dealt to the Columbus Blue Jackets for Pierre-Luc Dubois and a third-round pick. I'm going to get your thoughts on the trade first, Jenna.
I think that this trade was a good thing, honestly. Obviously, Laine has been a huge part of the Jets in the past. However, he is just not as consistent, I think, as we need. Like, with a team that has so much depth, we also need consistency, and he wasn't really providing that. And I don't know. I think it'll be a nice little change-up. See, and once, I guess, Dubois has his two-week quarantine, but it'll be interesting to see where he fits into everything. So I think it was a good trade. I really do.
I'm not going to lie, I was unhappy the very first day it was announced. trading Patrick Laine, trading a guy like Patrick Laine, I think is a mistake by any team, mainly because you don't find talent that he has. And granted, I mean, you're right, he probably did need some better consistency to be a much more impactful player. But a guy with a shot like that and a guy that legitimately hates to lose like he does, I don't think come along. I mean, everybody hates to lose, but I mean, that guy had all sorts of talent to be able to put together. The part that I struggled with the most was, and granted, I understand that Dubois wanted out of Columbus's madness that was going on there, but I just don't know why we continue to overpay for diminishing assets and trade away good young players. I don't understand Winnipeg's thought process on this. And I know that some of it has to do with money. I get that there's a salary cap. I get all that information. But there are declining assets on this team that are occupying way too much of the salary cap in terms of a percentage that should have been gone long before Laine was gone. That's my take on it.
That's very, very fair, actually. I mean, there is definitely a couple of players who aren't, they're not young, they're not old, but they're definitely not young. They're not producing as much as they used to, whereas someone like Laine might, obviously, like I said, he wasn't, you know, the most consistent lately, but he's still young. He's got a lot of talent. So yeah, I get where you're coming from on that point for sure.
I'm not gonna belabor the fact that, you know, Dubois comes in, we got a glut of centermen that we can use. I mean, he's gonna come in and bump somebody from a spot. If it's Nate Thompson, so be it. But at the same time, I look at this lineup now and I kind of go, there's a lot of inequality on this lineup in that you're bringing in a guy who's the same age as Laine, 22 years old, who plays center, who probably won't get paired on a top line setup. So you're bringing in a second line center, basically, which, again, the Jets have needed for a while. But you brought in Stastny to make Laine happy, only to trade Laine away, and then you're stuck with Stastny. And I don't get that. I don't understand the asset management that we think we are doing in this city, because Cheveldayoff seems to not know what's an asset and what's not. He just keeps trading guys away until they're happy.
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, you can't make everyone happy. I think at some point it's got to be.
But it's one of those things, though. I mean, before you even go on, it's one of those things, though, where did he even try to make Laine happy? Like, because it seems like that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, we can sit here and he can, you know, I watched the press conference with, you know, after the trade, you know, the analytics didn't work when he played beside Scheifele. You know, we needed better defensive effort. And then I watch Scheifele and Connor and Wheeler play the other day against Edmonton, and they get bombed. Like, they're terrible defensively. And yet we're complaining about one guy on one line about the work that he did defensively. And I get that you want the analytics to be better. Don't get me wrong. Everybody does. But you're talking about a 22-year-old player versus a guy who's 34 years old, a guy who's 27-ish, 28-ish, and a guy who's like 24, 25. Mm-hmm. Three guys that are older who should have been taught defense long before this season, and you trade away the 22-year-old who is trying to improve his defensive game but isn't quite there yet. Again, it makes no sense to me. I understand the point of it. I understand that you have to move somebody in terms of making this deal, and there's got to be equal compensation going both ways. But again, he's a 22-year-old superstar, and we're talking about moving him over, and I hate to say it, over a 34-year-old captain who isn't getting any younger, over a guy like again, Perreault, who's older and slower than what he was at one point, doesn't have the same wrist that he used to have after having that surgery that he had on it, can't really shoot the puck anymore, and we're keeping him around at $4 million a season. It's this kind of quote-unquote asset management that drives me bananas in terms of watching this team mire in mediocrity.
Yeah. I mean, I also think there might be a bit of, well, if we trade those guys, we're not going to get as much in return. Maybe, I don't know, but again, yeah, Laine's still young. He definitely is going to, at some point, that consistency is going to come, and it's going to bite the Jets in the butt.
but I mean, that's what happened with Solani, though. The complaint about Solani was that, I mean, yeah, he's your best star, and we need to get something for him if he's going to leave, and it sounded like Laine probably wanted out, and I'm not going to deny that. Laine probably wanted out after not getting what he wanted, which was a chance to play on the top line. I mean, he should be a top-line winger on some team, and it sounds like he will be now on Columbus for the foreseeable future anyway. But I kind of feel like the Jets got FOMO'd into this, in that Pierre-Luc Dubois kind of forced Columbus to make a trade, and then the Jets panicked and, in the fear of missing out, put together this deal that included Laine and Roslovic, who, again, Columbus has been dying to get a hold of. Columbus has been trying to deal for Roslovic now for like 4 years. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of package them together and toss them at Columbus and go, yeah, Dubois, yeah, give us him, we'll take him, throw him over here. And I go, why are we not looking at this from a bigger perspective and going, they're desperate, they desperately want Roslovic, they want to get rid of Dubois, we don't have to include a Laine unless we get more back with this.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, I don't know. To me, I mean, I'm not a GM. I'd probably be a terrible GM. I'd never make a trade because people would be like, you can't win every trade. But the whole goal of being a GM is to win every trade. Is it not?
You would think, yeah. It seems like that would make the most sense. But obviously that, yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
In the process of trading Laine, it seems the Jets have discovered a new first line now, as the Kopp, Stastny, Ehlers line, who I've affectionately been calling the Greenland line offline, is kind of their new first line now. People are going to go, what are you, Greenland line? That makes no sense. No, it actually does make sense. There's, because it's two Americans and a Dane, and they both want the same thing. So.
Oh, my God.
What? No? Does it work? No?
That's good. That was good. That was good.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, so... Ehlers, Kopp, Stastny, kind of your first line now, which then kind of takes the pressure off of Connor, Wheeler, Scheifele, which is good, but also not good in that if they're now playing second line minutes, you just traded for a third line center. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, that first line has been incredible, so I don't see them breaking that line up anytime soon. But then, like we were discussing before, what are you going to do? Throw them third line or put them, like, if they're trying to keep everyone happy, which they seem to be doing, which obviously at some point you're just going to have to say sorry, like, this is a team game, you gotta go where we say. But I don't know. Yeah.
Could you, and I mean, this is easy to say because we're not coaching the team and we're not part of the team, but could you and would you tell Shifley, Wheeler, and maybe not Connor, but Shifley and Wheeler for sure, if you guys want to play together, you're our new third line.
Yeah.
I mean, think about if you had Dubois and Connor and I don't know who else you could put up there, Harkins or Perreault or somebody. Anyway, if you had those two guys in Connor and Dubois playing together, you probably have a pretty good second line now. Yeah. So Shifley and Wheeler, if they're gonna whine and cry about wanting to play together and don't break us up and don't put anybody new on our line because we don't like that, then play the third line. Too bad.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think a lot of it is obviously a team game, and especially as a captain, you gotta sometimes just be like, well, gonna do what I need to do. And at the same time, like, the Jets have so much depth, it's not even really, yeah, they would be maybe third line, but at the same time, that third line would still be a decently strong line. No, they may not get the same minutes as the first line, but they still, like, the depth on the Jets is definitely getting better and it's there. So I don't see why, especially as a captain, you wouldn't be like, okay, well, I want what's best for the team. But
can I selfishly say that, I mean, and I've never played high level hockey in my life or anything like that, but if I was told I was playing on the third line, I'd be pretty excited because I'd be getting a lot of shifts against some terrible opposition lines. But that's the thing though, you like Wheeler and Shifley could go out there and just destroy the league, scoring all these goals and getting all these points playing against some other team's third line or fourth line, right? Like, you don't usually see a third line going out there with the numbers that of a Wheeler and Shifley. You could go out there and just dominate for like minutes on end if you wanted to, because you're going to have guys pinned in their zone for so long.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, at the same time, that would be nice, but I think they're into the like competition. They like when there's more competition. Yeah, it's nice to produce and be all over teams a lot, but at the same time, then it's not as fun because it's not as competitive. So
no, but I mean, at the same time though, you're winning games, and that's what everybody wants, is it not? Like, I mean, that's the goal. And again, that's again the reference to Greenland. Everybody wants to win.
Yeah. That's very fair. Yeah. I mean, winning's always obviously what you are aiming to do. So well, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see where he fits in once he gets here, or once he's out of his isolation, I guess. And
I was going to say, neither of us are Paul Maurice, and neither of us have that insight into what Paul Maurice might be thinking. But I'm very curious to see what they do with Dubois once he gets out of quarantine. Because yeah,
how much longer he has in quarantine? I can't
remember. The full 14 days. Apparently there was no. I don't know if there was an exception given yet, but the full 14 days is the last that I heard. So okay. I didn't look into it today or anything like that, but. What needs to be discussed, though, what needs to be mentioned is that the Winnipeg Jets, under the goggle-less Paul Maurice, are now 5-1. Yeah. Paul Maurice without glasses is 5-1 on behind the bench this season. And as far as I can tell, if he can't see either end of the ice, if he can only see like the neutral zone, I say stick with it, man, because you're winning hockey games.
Yeah, I mean, the Jets are producing a lot this year, which is nice to see. But that's funny, I didn't even realize until you said today that that's still goggle-less Maurice. That's 5-1. That's amazing.
the sans glasses Maurice is 5-1. The bespectacled Maurice is 0-1 on the season after losing that game to Toronto. So that's a big stat. The other big stat that I was surprised at, and I mean, I was laughing about this because I don't think it matters at all, obviously, but Jets in their whites are 2-1. Jets in their home blues are 3-0 now. Jets in their aviators are 0-1, so burn those. And then the reverse retros just burn anyway.
You know what? I still want to see them.
Back the Heritage jerseys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's fair. I still would like to see those reverse retro ones at some point. But
I mean, we will see them. I didn't check the schedule. I know Aesthetics, which is a great blog in terms of following jersey stuff, they have an entire calendar up now for when each team will wear them. So so if you're going to want to go check as to the first day you can wear gray to the rink, but gray at home while watching the Jets, they'll have it all there for you on Aesthetics. So go check that out if you're looking for that, folks. Other news out of the NHL, obviously some smaller stories that didn't really get seen, but I think ones that matter because in a weird story, the San Jose Sharks dropped Fanatics as their merchandiser. Now, you might know Fanatics as being the sort of we make everything for the NHL merchandiser. What's odd about this story is that there are only three teams now that use Fanatics for their entire merchandising setup, and that's New Jersey, Philadelphia, and Washington. San Jose was one of them, but they announced on Wednesday that they will no longer have Fanatics as, you know, stocking their store, their San Jose team shop, with exclusively Fanatics stuff. Huge business news, because honestly, I think the Fanatics stuff is terrible, but that's just me. But this will allow, it will allow for the Sharks, according to their statement anyway, to oversee merchandise design, manage their own inventory and quality control. It also allows them to sell and market more unique products to their fans. Thoughts on business changing for Fanatics, because it sounds like there are fewer and fewer teams that are happy with the products.
Yeah, I feel like sooner or later there's going to be really no one there, especially if they're not able to make those more unique or different sort of items that a lot of teams like to do, right? So I think sooner or later they're going to be out of there. And like I think you said before, that San Jose was now just taking over charge of basically all their merchandise. So yeah. That's honestly, that's a good business move on their part. I think they're going to make a little bit more money out of that, especially if they're making things that are unique and different compared to just the regular stuff that every NHL team's getting, right? So,
well, and that's always been sort of the complaint about, yeah, I mean, that's always been the complaint for me about, you know, when you walk into a sports store, there's like 15 different t-shirts for different teams, but they all look the same. Yeah. Like, I get the fact that it's easy just to produce one design and then, you know, swap up names or logos on it. Like, that's easy to do. But the unique stuff is what makes being a fan far more fun. Like, you don't get to see, you know, the crazy fun stuff that people do if you can't buy it. And I know that that's one of those things that really, again, people love to get the one-offs or the, you know, the unique things that nobody else can get their hands on. That's what it means to be a fan to me in terms of, you know, having this great collection of crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think that this is a good idea. I think that, and don't get me wrong, I know that Fanatics, you know, is doing their own thing in terms of, you know, being a bazillion-dollar company. But I hate the quality of their merchandise. Hate it. Like, the replica jerseys feel like they're made out of, legitimately out of, like, Saran wrap.
Yeah, they're definitely not the highest quality products. And I think, like you were saying, that's basically just what happens when you're trying to mass produce things and just change the logo as you go, right? You're not going to have a very high quality product because, I mean, if you're the only company doing it, you can do that. You can charge a bunch of money for honestly crap products because people are still going to buy them. Whereas now, since teams are, you know, taking things into their own hands or, like, you know, hiring other companies, I think it'll be nice to have some good quality stuff that isn't going to, you know, fall apart in 2 seconds or something that doesn't, like, if I have for example, I have a Chicago Blackhawks shirt that I got a long time ago. But like you said, you go into the sports store and there's 50 million shirts that are all just the exact same, but different logos on them. So it's nice to have a shirt that would be, you know, a little different than just being like, oh, I have the same shirt, whatever. Like, it's nice to have different things.
That's exactly it. Like, if you're a fan, you want to stand, you want to have that. I mean, again, everybody gets their own jersey and puts whatever they want on the back, right? Like, I mean, I have a pile of jerseys and I get, you know, weird and wonderful, you know, people on the back of my jerseys only because, again, it means something to me. That's the way it should be for anything else as well. Like, your t-shirt should have, if you're buying that t-shirt, it shouldn't just be like 1,500,000 fans in the arena that has the same t-shirt, unless you're there, you know, as a getting the free giveaway or whatever at the beginning. Even that's unique though, because only 15,000 people have it. But I look at that and I go, I think that this is, like you said, I think this is better because A, they'll probably make a little bit more money, but B, yeah, like, the merchandise will be so much better if they have a tie to it. They know what their fans want. And that's, I think, the key on that.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, exactly. The fans, they, at that point, they know what the fans want, or they know what they're going to maybe make money on or what they're not going to make money on. So I don't know. It'll be good because people will be a lot more excited about their merchandise now, for them at least. So
Can I tell you that one, there's, I mean, again, I'm not in Washington. I can't give you this information directly, but if I was a Washington Capitol fan, I wouldn't be happy today because those alternate jerseys they introduced on Tuesday night are absolute garbage.
Yeah, those I mean, you just sent it to me. I hadn't seen it yet, and my reaction was not great. I think it was like a what the frick
again, what the hell is that? Like, what is going on with Washington? Why can they not produce a solid quality? I get it. Like, they basically built off their winter classic jersey and trying to make it, you know, sort of fun and different than the winter classic. Why can they not go back to the Capitol building that they used to wear, like on that black jersey they had in like the 90s? Like, what is wrong with Washington taking good jerseys and making them bad? Again, we saw them go from the Capitals logo to that screaming eagle that everybody hated. And everybody was kind of like, ah. And then they switched the screaming eagle out to the state capitol, which everybody kind of went, all right, it's better. It's not great, but it's better. And then they go back to the Capitals and everybody's like, yay, this is perfect. Let's keep the cap. And then they start messing around again. Like,
yeah,
I don't understand why teams take good designs and make them terrible.
And that's the thing. I'm like reading it right now too. And I get the symbolism that they're trying to put behind it. But I mean, this, for example, the W stands alone as the capital letter to symbolize the strength of the nation's capital. Well, why not just put the capital back on the jersey then? Right. Like, why do you need to put this big giant W that just, I mean, I get it, but also it just, why not just put the capital and not make it something that, I mean, I wouldn't have known that if I wasn't reading this page right now. So, I mean, you put the capital, that's obvious symbolism right there. Whereas this big W, you have to kind of explain it because I don't know. It's weird though. I do not like these jerseys one bit.
But the other thing that really sort of bothers me, and again, I'm not a Washington Capitals fan, and I never will be, so that's fine. Like, the three stars represent Maryland, Washington, D.C., and Virginia left to right. Well, you're the Washington Capitals. You're not the Maryland. You're not the Virginia Capitals. Like, I get that you're representing an area, but you're the Washington Capitals. Like, that would be like Winnipeg putting a W on there and putting the three. This stands for Northwestern Ontario, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan. Like, no, you're not. You're the Winnipeg Jets. You have nothing to do with Saskatchewan or Kenora. Get out of there.
Yeah, seriously, though. Like, yeah, too much. Like, I think somebody just thought way too much about this jersey and made it the most confusing as possible. And just like put in things that really don't make sense.
Well, I mean,
if you read it, it kind of makes sense, but also not really. Like, it just, I don't know. It's
the Stadium Series jerseys that they based it off of were terrible anyway. Those red ones with the big W, the big navy W on them anyway. So I don't know why you would go back to this. Like, did you miss out on a sales opportunity here? Like, what's the point? I don't know. I hate this jersey, but they're only going to wear it 7 times apparently. And that's good.
I feel like that's 7 too many. 7 too many.
Yeah. The other problem, though, that hits me is that they're going to wear this jersey for the next 3 seasons.
Oh, okay. So even more too many then.
And by the way, this would be the this would now be the 4th jersey that the Capitals will wear this year, because they have their home and home and road. They have their reverse retro, and now they have the alternate jersey. Not as many as St. Louis, who has 5, mind you, but.
That's like, how do you pick and choose?
Again, what's the point of having a jersey at all? Just go to a thrift store and buy something new every day and just call it even. Like,
yeah, why have that many bad jerseys? Like, why not? Why not like put in the money and make one really nice one and just stick with that?
Jenna, you're starting to sound like me now.
Spend too much time talking to you.
I just don't get it. Like, it just drives me nuts. So anyway,
yeah, no, that's. Like I said, that was
when you shock. Said
that, I was like, what are you, like, that's not what I wanted to see, so thank you.
Gonna jump into the bigger story now. We got about a half hour left here on the show, so I'm gonna jump into the bigger story now that I think that I kind of sent ripples through Twitter the other day when I sent this out. We have seen a vast number of Canadian media outlets, CBC, Sportsnet, TSN, for example, that have lined up, that have clamored, that have basically begged people to come on their show to talk about the American Professional Women's Hockey League that's currently playing in their 2-week bubble tournament that they're having. I'm significantly confused by why there's this outpouring of we need to speak to you when the CWHL was here previously and nobody paid attention, and university hockey, where all these players are coming from, gets zero attention from any of these major media outlets, especially when those major media outlets hold rights to air the national championships. That's the part that really kills me, is that, and I get that Sportsnet held the rights to both the CWHL and to U Sports for a long time. I get that. But where the hell were they when those two leagues have come to them and said, we want you to do more, and they go, no, we're not going to do that. Nobody's interested.
Yeah, it's honestly a little bit frustrating. I mean, even there's that one tweet I retweeted, and it just says, you know, I'm happy to see Canadian sports media provide consistent coverage of the NWHL bubble games. But it also stings a bit. Where the heck were you a few years ago when the CWHL was still around? And I mean, I just saw that today, and there's been a couple girls that I know that play in the NWHL that also are like feeling the same way, because they're all liking and responding. So it's very frustrating. I mean, like you said, those teams came to the media how many times saying, we need you to do more, we need this. And they were just like, no, I don't really want to do it. But now all of a sudden there's 1 2-week tournament and everyone's just going absolutely bonkers for it. Which again, like, that's great that women's hockey is getting the coverage, but what about the CWHL? What about, you know, Canadian university hockey, even American university hockey? Like, there's nothing when it comes to that. And then all of a sudden they're like, they want to, like you said, they're begging people to come talk, whatever, but they don't even know who half these people are. Like,
but that's the catch though for me, is that you're absolutely into this whole idea of trying to expose this league as being this great thing. And granted, I mean, everybody's got their own path in terms of trying to make pro women's hockey work. I'm not here to rip down the NWHL. I have my own issues with them. But at the end of the day, there is amazing hockey being played in everybody's backyard, from Vancouver right across to Halifax, from north up to Edmonton, south down to Windsor, Ontario. There is amazing hockey being played in centers across this country, and not one of these media conglomerates have ever ventured outside their studios to walk into one of those arenas to do a feature on any of those players, to do a feature on any of those teams. And it drives me bananas when I see CBC begging people to come on their radio shows and their TV shows to talk about this league, and they hold the rights to U Sports, to the U Sports National Championships. Like, at what point does the hypocrisy? And this isn't just a CBC thing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not piling on the CBC here. They do great work for amateur sports. It's the same way as when Sportsnet held it. Sportsnet couldn't give, you know, a whimsical care in the world about U Sports until it was time that they got their money, that they were coming to U Sports and they were going to air the national championship and we're taking all the ad revenue. I get that people might not tune in by the millions to watch a game or to watch a feature or anything like that. Again, Manitoba Bisons and Venla Hovey were featured on, you know, they talked a little bit about Venla, you know, during her Olympic year on Hometown Hockey. It was great to see.
Yeah.
CBC and Sportsnet in terms of Hometown Hockey, do a great job. That it's one program where you can catch some of that stuff. But why are there not more stories written about these women? Why are there not more? And the men's programs too. This isn't just a women's hockey thing. It is a women's hockey thing in terms of not getting enough coverage, period. But for university sports alone, it's both men's and women's hockey. And there should be a greater emphasis placed on learning about these women before they get to the pro level, then there is just, well, who are these people? Who are these women that are playing? Why don't we know about them?
I mean, I think also, like, it shouldn't have to take, you know, a team having obviously an incredible hockey player that's, you know, an Olympian on it to get the coverage that they need. Like, the Bisons have always been a very strong team. Any team, and even the teams that don't win as much, like, they have some amazing women's hockey players. And even now, like, if these people are, you know, obviously there's not, I mean, it's a 2-week tournament. There's not that many games being played. Again, I'm happy that there is coverage of women's hockey, even though it's frustrating in some levels, but at the same time, like, why not also then talk about, you know, what to see next season when these players all go back to the university teams, or talk about the teams that they came from and say, well, you should, you know, just start also supporting, you know, Canadian university hockey at all while you have, you know, the platform. Again, it shouldn't have to take something like this to do that. It should be something that should be done year round. But even now, these people are saying they care so much about women's hockey. Well, why not promote all women's hockey right now when you have the platform?
Right, exactly. It's not about one league or one level. You're doing the entire sport a disservice by focusing on one tiny aspect of it. And that's the part that kills me, is that this is a 2-week tournament. If this was a regular, you know, everyday league, chances are there probably wouldn't be a lot of chatter. Toronto, maybe, because they have a team in Toronto. I get that. TSN and Sportsnet, fine. Rest of Canada probably wouldn't give a crap about it. But that's its own problem in terms of what's going on. The thing that kills me, and this is where, I mean, again, I don't mean to turn it on you, Jenna, but the McEwen Griffins are leaving the ACAC after winning 3 straight and were on the verge of winning a 4th straight ACAC championship. Bar none, Mount Royal, who's already in Canada West, is probably the only comparison that can be made in terms of how dominant they were at one point before joining Canada West. McEwen is coming into Canada West as probably the most, if not one of the most dominant teams to have ever played in the ACAC. And you guys got zero coverage from people in Edmonton. You guys were lower on the totem pole than the Pandas, who get barely any coverage. And don't get me wrong, again, this isn't, global TV in Edmonton does a good job covering the Pandas. They talk about the Pandas regularly. I know that for a fact. But the fact that 5 kilometers away, there is a team that won 4 straight ACAC championships, gets no coverage, is baffling to me.
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating. I mean, you're always just deemed as like, oh, you're in the ACAC, like you're not whatever. But when it comes down to it, like, I know playing against U of A, like, I mean, the first couple years I was there, we were not a strong team. But like you said, they've won 3 championships now. They should have won a 4th one. But it was definitely frustrating. I mean, there was, for example, U of C, like they refused to play against us for so long. And then when they finally did, like we beat them, like we've beat teams at that level. And when we've lost the last couple, I'm saying we, like I still play there. When they've lost the
You're a Griffin for life. It's okay.
Yeah, I am. I love the Griffins. But you know, the last couple of years, every time, even if they have lost, it's never been a blowout. Like they compete, they have a ton of skill. Like that team has so much depth. Even, you know, their 4th line, if you put them out there, like they work harder than anyone else. They may not have, you know, the goal scoring, the whatever, but they will still outwork anyone. It's crazy. It's definitely frustrating being there. And I know from like my own, like you said, U of A, they do get some coverage, definitely not as much as they should too, because again, they have some incredible players. But yeah, it's definitely very frustrating being a hockey player in university as a woman, especially, I mean, as a man as well, a male as well, but as a female, like it's frustrating because nobody sees you as whatever. There's half the time we'd go out and people would be like, oh, I didn't even know like McEwen had a team. We're like, okay, but we actually just won. Right? The last
3 like years. That's to hear that is the, I mean, and again, I didn't play, but to hear that is a slap in the face to me, because you've won 3 straight championships. Well, not you specifically, Jenna, but
I got 2.
Yeah, you got 2 of them, which is okay, but you've won 3 straight. You were legitimately 3 periods away from winning a 4th, and we didn't even know you had a team. What?
Yeah. It's definitely, and yeah, it's not like it's a whole complete level down from, you know, U sport either. Obviously they're going to be in the league next year, and I honestly think they may not be, you know, one of the top teams, but I think that they're going to compete. Like they're not going to get blown out. They're gonna do okay. And I think a lot of people will be like, oh, I've never heard of this team until recently, and then they're going to be in there and they're going to be competing, and it's going to be a big shock. But
see, I disagree. I did this the preview for the 2021 Grant McEwen Griffins on Tuesday on Hockey Blog in Canada.
Yes.
And I wrote in there, that this team is going to come in with zero fear and will play like they have nothing to lose, which is entirely, when I in terms of what I've seen from McEwen, entirely true. I mean, they have an army. Don't get me wrong. There are like 90 players on the roster, and they're going to have to figure out what's going on. I know there have
definitely been changes made to that before.
Right, and they're going to have to figure everything out. But I look at this and I go, I look at Grant McEwen's chances for next year. McEwen is going to make the playoffs next year in Canada West. I'm just going to say that right now. I'm on record right now saying it. They are going to make the playoffs because people are going to take them as, oh, they're just that ACAC team. Who cares? And they're going to come in and punch people in the mouth.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. That team is, there's something, I don't know what it, Lindsay does an amazing job, but they're going to come in and there's something special about that team, like the environment. I mean, I've played on other teams and it just, there's something special about that team that just makes them, like, the hunger they have, they don't quit. And I think a lot of that obviously has to do with Lindsay, but they're going to come in strong for sure. And you know what? I could definitely see them making the playoffs, but.
So here's the question then. Why does nobody know? And that's the question. And don't get me wrong. This is a U Sports problem in that they don't promote their own sports and their own athletes as well as they should. This is a Canada West problem in that Canada West doesn't promote their own students. I was goofing around the other day, just getting stuff going, looking for information. And I tweeted out a little piece of news about a player, a UBC defenseman. His name is Kyle Becker. Mm-hmm. So Kyle was signed by the SPHL's Huntsville Havoc, signed his first pro contract, first professional contract for Kyle Becker, defenseman number 13 for the UBC Thunderbirds. UBC didn't even mention it.
Shut up.
The UBC Thunderbirds Twitter account did not mention, maybe the men's hockey, I didn't check the men's hockey one, but the UBC, the one where all the main news comes out about UBC Thunderbirds, did not tweet out that Kyle Becker had signed a professional contract in the SPHL. And we wonder why there's nobody knows about anything when it comes to university hockey. We're our own worst enemies in some cases. And don't get me wrong, I've tried my best to tweet out as much as I can about Canada West women's hockey. I have an interest in it. I have a vested interest in it, and then I'm a broadcaster. I get that people are going to go, oh, well, whatever. But I shouldn't be the only person talking about it.
Yeah.
So
no, there should be a lot more talk about it than there is. That's 100% for sure.
I mean, I look at this now and I just go, and I get that Yair TV, which does all the web streaming services, and people, if you're going to get in on it now. I know they don't have package information up because there's no games being played, but bookmark the site. It's cw.yairtv.com or something like that. I don't know. Go look it up. Yair TV, Y-A-R-E. Anyway, that's where you can catch all of the stuff next year. I don't understand how there isn't more being done and more networks being approached locally, whether it be local public access or whatever. I don't know how there isn't more stuff being done by the teams themselves. And I get that, you know, people have been laid off and pandemic and whatever, but there needs to be a concerted effort by everybody at every level, U Sports, Canada West, individual teams, to go out and market this stuff as best they can. And right now that seems to be a non-factor for anybody, because hey, who cares? Nobody's playing games, so why would we talk about it? The worst thing about being talked about is not being talked about. It's as simple as that. And right now nobody even knows. Does anybody listening to this program today know that Autumn McDougall, the former leading scorer in Canada West hockey, the former Alberta Panda, is playing in that two-week bubble right now? Does anybody even know that? She led the conference in scoring and she's playing pro hockey. Does anybody know that? Probably not. A handful maybe, but not a lot.
Yeah.
And yet she's never been interviewed but for Canadian TV. I had her on the show in March. We talked all about it. We talked about her getting drafted and she was excited and, you know, here looking forward to the opportunity. Anybody else talk to her? Nah.
No.
And this is the part that kills me, is that I look at the teams like McEwen, and I look at the teams like Red Deer, and I look at the teams like Assiniboine, who won the NCAA Division III title a couple of years ago. Assiniboine Community University in Brandon won the ACHA or whatever it is. I don't even know what it is called, what league they're in, but they won an NCAA championship.
Yeah.
A little town in Brandon, in Manitoba, called Brandon, went to Dallas and won an NCAA title. And yet we don't talk about it. Nobody talks about it very often. I know Ryan Stelter did when he worked there, because Ryan worked with us at the university for a long time, and he worked for the Brandon Sun. And Ryan went out and actually did a story on them. Mm-hmm. But did that story get beyond the borders of Brandon, Manitoba? No.
Nope.
I mean, the St. Albert, everybody knows who the St. Albert Slash are, because they win the ESO Cup every year. Who did they play in the final last year? Nobody remembers.
Yeah.
Good job, TSN. You hold the rights to that.
Yeah, there definitely needs to be some changes here, you know. Just, I mean, even the men's team, for example, I know the rookie or the Nate and McEwen men had their all-stars play, like the Oilers rookies or whatever, and even after that, like, right, there's still nothing about them ever. Like, obviously they have a pretty strong program if they can go. I think they ended up winning one of the games. Like, it was crazy. And even after that, there's still no coverage, just because, you know, they're ACAC, they're not even U Sport, so why would we cover that, right? When you have the Oilers, we have the WHL team, they have everything above that. So it's, I mean, that's just a men's example. It's even worse in women's hockey. So,
well, I'm on record right here right now, and I'm making this proclamation. I'm going to continue doing what I do, but CBC's got to pick up the slack if they want to. If they, I mean, again, U Sports has got to push them to do this. I know that U Sports is basically as tough as a bubble, and they, you know, they back down the moment that there's a breeze out there. But if U Sports wants to be taken seriously as an actual legitimate program in this country, it's time for them to stand up like the NCAA stood up in the U.S. And if U Sports isn't willing to do that, then the individual leagues, the OUA, the RSEC, the AUS, and Canada West need to stand up on their own and do that. Because the amount of amazing athletes that go through each of those conferences each year over a five-year period of eligibility is ridiculous. And we don't talk about them.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. It's the skill and talent that are in these leagues is absolutely insane. And I think a lot of people just like put that past, because, you know, oh, they didn't go play in the States at one of those super expensive schools. Well, a majority of the girls that are playing, you know, in U Sport can play at those high levels. It's just, it's the same level of hockey. It's just a lot less money for us, at least. So
here, I'll double down on that then. How many stories have you seen this week, Jenna, you alone? How many stories this week have you seen about Kayla Friesen scoring her first NWHL goal as a member of the Connecticut Whale?
I've seen a couple.
Have they been from major media sources in Manitoba? No.
No, definitely not.
Yet she's the lone Winnipegger playing in the league, and nobody's talking about her.
Yep.
Again.
I mean, that's crazy, because she is incredible. Like, the skills she has, even, like, there should be so much more talk, especially, you know, when you think about it. I mean, obviously, it's still not great when it comes to, like, our Olympic team and stuff, but they, you know, Bridget Laquette, Jocelyn Leroux, they do get talked about a little bit. And I would say Kayla is also, you know, she's playing pro hockey. She's playing an incredible level. She scored her first goal as a pro hockey player. And I've seen a couple articles, but they haven't, like you pointed out, they haven't been from major media. They've just been stuff, because I'm friends with Kayla, so I've seen them posted, you know.
But this,
like, if that weren't for her, I wouldn't see them.
But this is what I mean. We've had people on CBC here, we've had people on, you know, locally here trying to, you know, talking about, you know, the 2-week bubble tournament. And I just go, how is it that nobody pays attention to the important stuff? How is it that nobody pays attention to this stuff when they seem to make this, I don't want to say facade of pretending to care, but that's essentially what it is. They pretend to care. And I know that there are certain people that do care, you know, various individual people. But getting it past a producer, or getting it okayed by a producer to have it on air, seems to be a non-issue, because they don't even want to hear it. And I don't understand. I just don't get it, that with all of the local focus on, you know, local news programs and all that, how there isn't more stories on what's going on locally in the hockey scene, in the football scene, in the whatever, that doesn't come from a blogger or from somebody who has a vested interest in the sport. I just don't.
Yeah. That's a very fair point, actually. Like you said, you'd think like our local news, our local this would be more about local stuff that's, you know, maybe not.
But I'm with you on that, though. I don't understand it, and there needs to be something better. So again, nobody from CBC or Sportsnet is listening to this, and I get that, and nobody ever will, because we're just this little tiny radio station in the middle of Winnipeg, which again is entirely the problem with how major media views everything. But you own the right, CBC. Let's start using that to your own advantage. You want to be taken seriously in terms of being an amateur, of carrying amateur sports? Go out and forget the skiing from Hungary, and forget the bobsled from Switzerland. I get that those are important, and those deserve to be on TV just as much, but let's do some actual writing and some stories on the people that come from Winnipeg, the people that come from across this great nation, from the university level that you actually own the rights to.
Yeah, like you said, like why are we sharing, you know, stories about athletes that literally probably have never even been to Winnipeg or whatever, when there's, you know, Caleb Friesen or lots of other athletes from Winnipeg that should be, you know, talked about in the media a lot more than they are. So
yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I'm happy that Toronto's got a professional women's hockey team. Good for them. I don't care. Not that I don't care about the team or the players or anything like that. I just don't care. It's Toronto. Like, I would rather see more stories about the women playing here in Winnipeg, or the women, the players that are coming from Winnipeg and playing somewhere else across the world and doing some great on a different stage, than I would to hear about some American player playing for Toronto. That's just me, though. Maybe I'm the wrong guy to be marketing it to.
That's fair. Know.
But anyway, that's the rant.
I mean, there needs to be a balance. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, cover the Toronto Six. I'm not saying not to cover the Toronto Six, if that's what you're going to do.
Yeah, no, for sure. But there needs to be a balance of it. Like, there needs to be coverage about Winnipeggers, because, like you said, I mean, probably half the city has no idea. Like, they might have, you know, heard of the NWHL bubble. They might have paid attention to that, but they probably have no idea that Kayla Friesen is from probably, you know, a couple streets away from them, and she's out playing there, scoring goals. So.
Lighting the lamp and looking good doing it. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, her goal was a good goal. I have no problem with her scoring a goal. So anyway, if you want to look up Kayla's goal, check out Twitter, because that's the only place you can probably find it in Winnipeg. In saying that, one last piece of news before we get into the return to play, because we got about 5 minutes to go here. We mentioned a couple weeks ago, the ECHL added two new teams in Trois-Rivières and Coralville, Iowa for the 2021-2022 season. Apparently lots of money to spend in hockey, because the ECHL announced on Wednesday that Savannah, Georgia, will have an ECHL team for 2022-2023, bringing them to 29 teams total. I don't know where all this money is coming from for the ECHL, but it seems to be the most popular league in the world right now.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, I feel like we've heard of new teams every day, basically. That's an exaggeration, obviously, but that's crazy. Where did they get the money for this? Like,
I don't know. That's the thing. I have no idea what's going on with this, other than there was a release. Let me just see if I can find it there. I got a release earlier today about it, because I do actually keep up with one guy from the ECHL, and I got sent a release about the information today about Savannah. Here it is. Savannah Lands professional hockey team. So they're going to have a name the team contest. It's owned by Rue Hockey. Now you're probably going to go, what's that? Apparently Andy Kaufman, who's the CEO of Zoyer Sports, Bob Orablo, he's the president, will serve as the team governor, and Scott Einhorn will serve as the executive vice president. So they also, Rue Hockey apparently is also owners of the Jacksonville Icemen, who play in the ECHL. So like the other two teams that we heard from Trois-Rivières and the same owners basically own this team as they do another team. So they got a new arena down there though. 9,500 seats, 7,300 for hockey, 12 luxury boxes, 5 lodge boxes, and a party suite. It will open in the winter of 2022 and welcome, I guess, the ECHL at that time. So brand new arena down there.
I like the sound of that.
Savannah, Georgia. I always want to know what they're going to be called. That's kind of an interesting.
Yeah. Sound. Hey. So Savannah. I don't know.
We'll see.
Better be something cool.
Yeah, better be something cool. I want to see some cool name there. Finally, return to play action within the province of Manitoba. A little bit different than what we've heard. I just want to bring to light Alberta. Alberta, before we get into Manitoba, has announced that Alberta is going to review and decide as of February 1st whether or not any league play will happen this year. They've had no direction. Obviously, Alberta's still in a lockdown or in a semi-lockdown. They've had no direction as to what they're going to do. So the Alberta is basically saying that they're going to take matters into their own hands and review and decide on February 1st whether or not they're going to have any league play for any leagues this year. Manitoba, Hockey Manitoba, teams have to apply to Hockey Manitoba for the return to play program and will be required to spend at least 10 days in phase 2, which includes on-ice skill development and team tactics, but no regular season competition or exhibition games.
Interesting. Yeah. It's better than nothing.
For a coach who's gone through better than nothing all season, is it better than nothing though? I mean, like at this point, are you just kind of going like, well, hockey season's almost over?
Yeah, definitely. It's almost over. At the same time, I think it's super important for these, I know, especially for my girls, to just even get back out for a little bit, regardless of if they're playing games or not. They haven't played all season. I think, you know, it might be risky depending on, you know, what our numbers are like and whatnot, because obviously last time it didn't go well. But
at the same time,
I think it is important for them to get back out there, even if there's only, you know, half of them on the ice at one time, half at another time. I know that they have been working to get back on the ice. And I mean, personally, I really want to see how their workouts have been going. So I want to see how much they've improved, but I think it's important for them to even just get out for a little bit, work on a little bit of skills, just feel the ice again for the first time in how many months has it been now?
Forever?
I don't even know. Yeah. I mean,
feels like it's been 6 years.
Yeah, it honestly really does. Like, I feel like I haven't seen the girls I've coached unless it's through a computer screen in like 2 years now. So, I mean, yeah, you can go to outdoor rink and that's obviously super fun. And that's where you do learn a lot of skills because you can try different things. But I think the organized part of it is also huge for these girls. Like they're, at least my girls, and even I know obviously kids playing organized sport or whatever, like the competition is a huge thing, regardless of if it's, you know, just exhibition or even if you're playing against your teammates, just the act, having a little bit of actual competition just to push you a little bit. It's always fun. So I think they need it. So hopefully we can, even like I said, if it's half of them on the ice at once, half later on, like two, you split the ice time in half, I think that's still better than nothing. They get to see each other. They get a little bit of instruction rather than just shooting pucks for a few hours. I think it'll be good if we can get back into it.
Well, speaking of getting back into it, we are actually out of it because we're out of time. So Jenna, anything you want to say in terms of getting out of here for the day?
No, I think just biggest thing with this Bell, you know, Let's Talk Day is obviously it's okay to not be okay. If you need help, reach out. We're always here for you, but make sure you're reaching out if you need help, because there's a lot of people that are out there to help you. So
yeah, lots and lots of people that are willing to talk and willing to chat. If you just need somebody to touch base with, by all means, like Jenna said, reach out. We're on Twitter. You can find us fairly easily. We're all over that. With that though, folks, we're gonna get out of here for another day. Be safe today on Bell Let's Talk Day. Obviously, stay tuned for Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM. We'll see you next week, everybody, here on the Hockey Show.
people were so nice in Winnipeg. It was freezing. And they kept apologizing for the weather. They're like, sorry it's so cold, sorry it's so cold. I was like, I'm almost positive it's not your fault. But they kept apologizing, sorry about the weather. Eventually I was like, did you not pay a bill or something?
Politely broadcasting from Winnipeg, this is 101.5 UMFM.
Weather work different up here?